Welcome to Fantasy Football Weekly, a production of iHeartRadio.
Time now for Fantasy Football Weekly from iHeartRadio, your weekly source for the nation's best fantasy football advice, speculation, and whatever stupid stuff they decide to drop into the show. Now here's your host, Paul Charchian.
Welcome to the show. It's Fantasy Football Weekly. We are back for another edition in this, the fourth and final set of division by division tours around the NFL. My co-hosts this week are Brian Johnson and Matt Harrison. Hello, guys.
Hello. Welcome to the Wild, Wild West.
Let's finish this cross-country tour, this grueling cross-country
tour. You think it's grueling?
No,
it's been nothing but fun. It's been a month of breaking down offenses. Mostly about what these offenses are going to be different this year, because everybody wants to just replay last year. Why do most of the cheat sheets that you see at this time of year, especially, they're basically just, well, what order did they finish in last year? That'll be my starting point. So unoriginal. But that's not what we do here.
Do you think it would be more fun for us to take a cross-country road trip as a Fantasy Football Weekly crew, or do these divisions over a four-week span? Which is more fun?
I would rather have the cross-country road trip.
Oh, okay.
And I want to be in... Somebody sent me, like, I did a radio show about 3 weeks ago about RVing, because mm-hmm. I was thinking that might be the summer trip, would be in an RV where I don't have to fly. I don't have to be in hotels. I just like clean the RV one time. You rent it, right? Mm-hmm. You clean it one time and you go have fun. Somebody sent me the Mercedes-Benz Windstar something.
I've seen a few of those Mercedes RVs around.
Oh my God. The thing's amazing. But it was $300,000 and it sleeps two. Now, one of the advantages of this thing is it's just like the size of a large van.
Yeah.
So you're not taking this enormous contraption, right? Yeah. But it has all of the, appointments of what you would imagine a Mercedes RV would have. Unbelievable.
Granite countertops.
Yes. And, yep. Yes. Yeah. That sort of stuff.
All that stuff.
Oh, it was fantastic.
A butler in the bathroom.
That'd be you.
Yeah.
So if we can get that thing, you can be the butler. Brian can be the driver.
It won't sleep me. I'll be the butler.
You sleep in the bathroom, standing up. No problem. Let's go to the...
I'd probably rather hang out in the bathroom than drive the RV, to be honest.
Well, at least you get the bathroom. Yeah. Yeah. AFC West and NFC West this week, which if you missed any of the other divisions, you can go back through our previous podcast. We encourage you to do that. And not only are we going to break down how these offenses work, which is sort of the main focus, just how does this offense feel like it's going to come together, if at all? And then we're also identifying the riskiest player to draft compared to ADP for that team and the player with the most upside compared to ADP. So that's the premise. We begin with the AFC West and your reigning champions, the Kansas City Chiefs. Matt.
Yeah, you know that Chiefs offense. It's pretty good.
I'm familiar, yes.
It's kind of why they have 10 players going in the top 300 of ADP, and it's actually 11 if you include kicker Harrison Butker.
Well, yeah, there. He's, I think, almost universally the number one ranked fantasy kicker.
Yeah, he's in there too. So let's start with the big arm of Patrick Mahomes. He threw 9 touchdowns last season.
9 times.
There it is.
9 times.
That went 40-plus yards. He led the league in that category.
To nobody's surprise.
So
really.
You think his receivers are just flying downfield and he's hitting people open 20 yards downfield? That's not the case. Average depth of target for his wide receivers and tight ends ranged between 9.4 to 13.4, with Tyreek Hill, who's kind of the most notable receiver, slotting in at 12.5. Mm-hmm. So the cool thing about Mahomes is he throws his receivers open, because get this. Yards after catch per reception, Travis Kelce gained another 4 yards after the catch. Mm. Hill, another 4.8. Watkins, 5.8. Mecole Hardman.
Here it comes, baby.
11.4.
Yeah, one of my favorite sleepers this year. I love it.
So I'm totally not worried about the passing game, and you could consider each of the top 3 players in Hill, Kelce, and Mahomes as pretty safe. The upside play is Mecole Hardman. It was only a year ago that Hardman was looking like the guy who would just slot into the offense as the Tyreek Hill replacement. And they're similarly built speed receivers. Hill had the fastest clocked time in the NFL last year at 22.8 miles per hour when he was chasing down Damian Williams on a touchdown.
That's funny. He didn't have the ball in his hand. He was just helps. Yes.
But Hardman had the fastest speed in the league on a scoring play last year at 21.7 miles per hour.
Wow.
So if these guys get drunk and go out running, will they get a DUI when they're that fast? That's all I know.
They almost, right?
It's kind of dangerous.
Yes. Could hurt people.
Yeah.
Hardman tied for the league lead in 25-plus yard touchdown receptions with 5 last year.
Yeah.
He's entering year 2 in a Patrick Mahomes offense. You don't have to draft him till round 9. He only finished as the 49th wide receiver in fantasy, but he only had 26 receptions.
Yeah, if you, to get to 49th in fantasy points at your position on 26 receptions.
26 receptions.
Says a lot.
That's like 2 per game. That's less than 2 per game.
It is. Now, Hardman killed you in the games in which he didn't score, basically.
Yeah.
Because the volume was so low. When you're getting a catch and a half per game on average, you better score. And so that was why I think people are going to be nervous about Hardman. Mm-hmm. And especially in like a guillotine format where he's super, super dangerous.
Sure.
But if you think those 26 are going to turn into
52.
Yeah, right.
Which is roughly exactly double what Sammy Watkins had last year. Uh-huh. 52 receptions.
Yeah.
I think Hardman with 52 receptions, which is not a lot, mm-hmm. which is like, that was about 47th among wide receivers in the NFL last year.
Yeah.
He'd easily go over 1,000 yards, and he had 6 touchdowns last year, and he'd easily improve on that. So mm-hmm. I think that he's the best upside there.
Yes.
The biggest risk, but also maybe the highest reward, is Clyde Edwards-Helaire.
I don't know. Yes.
Is it Helaire?
Like hello? No, it's not like that at all, actually. But you're correct in not saying the H.
He's going off the board in the 3rd round. Mm-hmm. The problem is it's a little murky on the running back depth chart. Last year, players with 7 or more touches from the running back position on the Chiefs, Damian Williams did it 11 times. Mm-hmm. McCoy did it 10. Darrell Williams did it 4. Darwin Thompson did it 3 times. Now, Shady McCoy's gone, but both the Williams, Darwin Thompson, and DeAndre Washington are now on the depth chart, as well as CEH. And I know Andy Reid has deployed workhorse backs in the past, most recently Kareem Hunt in the 2018 season. And I know talent wins out, and he's the most talented back on the roster.
He is.
And I'm probably drafting him with the first overall pick in our rookie draft coming up in the Empire League.
You probably are.
But I was asked to come up with a risky player, and he's the riskiest player on this roster.
We can love him and still say ADP. There's real danger here because he may only get 50% of the snaps.
Yeah, that's the only danger here. And mm-hmm. I think talent wins out, but I'm probably in a redraft league going to take this 1 year off and look at him probably next year.
Let's go to the Denver Broncos. Brian, this is a team with a couple of notable new faces in Melvin Gordon, Jerry Jeudy, and everybody thinks Drew Lock is ready to make the next move here and really add some passing balance to this offense. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, Denver last year, 57.1% passing plays. That was 24th most. They ran the ball 43% of the time. That was the 9th most. So they were a little run heavy last year. Only 1.7 offensive touchdowns per game. That was the second fewest.
That's bad.
New OC and Pat Shurmur, though, who has a very nice track record outside of the Giants mess a couple of years ago, but mm-hmm. no one was going to thrive in that Gettleman environment. So I'm going to give him a pass on that one.
Yep.
I want to note how Brian gets a Gettleman dig in on every one of his stream preview. It doesn't matter what team it is. He's going to figure out the way to bring it back to how Gettleman sucks.
I'm pretty sure I've mumbled in my sleep like, effing Dave Gettleman. But hey, I'm a Bengals fan now. And by the way, no one is allowed on the Bengals bandwagon this year.
I was the only one on last year.
I'm holding the gate. Everyone was laughing. So
you're holding the door shut.
Screw you all. Anyway, back to Drew Lock. Right now going out in the late 13th round as quarterback 23.
Wow, I've got him quite a bit higher than that.
A lot of people do. The hype is real. The hype is building around Drew. Only 5 starts last year. He did go 4-1. Came out on fire with 5 touchdown passes across his first 2 starts, but that was against a depleted Chargers secondary and then a brutal Houston secondary. Struggled in Kansas City in the blizzard and then didn't really put up numbers in the last 2, but Denver wants Locke to be the guy.
Well, yeah. I mean, look at their look what they've done at the quarterback position since Manning left.
So it's all
disaster.
He looks like he has what it takes. He's got the build. He's got the arm. Mm-hmm. He looks like he's got the mental game. So it's all about the additions to the arsenal in the offseason. Before we get to those, I want to talk about Courtland Sutton really quick. Obviously, yeah. The wide receiver one on the Broncos right now in redraft, going in the fifth round is wide receiver 24, going way higher in dynasty, of course. Sutton was a top 12 wide receiver in the first half of 2019 with Joe Flacco and Brandon Allen as his quarterback. His second half was actually torpedoed by his final 4 weeks. I remember him having a monster second half, but in his final four games, finished no higher than wide receiver 40. So that really put a damper on his numbers. But regardless, he made a huge leap in his second year. As a rookie in 2018, Sutton was 82nd out of 126 wide receivers in yards after the catch. Last year, he finished 29th.
Nice.
And he shows all the traits of an elite wide receiver. The main concern is there's more competition for targets now. And let's get to that than there was last year. And that starts with Jerry Jeudy, first-round pick. 24 touchdowns across his last two seasons at Alabama. He looked amazing in Alabama's spread offense.
So productive.
The concerns are he might struggle a little bit against the more physical corners in the NFL in press coverage. And he's tall. He's 6'2". He's a little wiry at 200. He doesn't have a massive wingspan, though. 76 inches is kind of dinosaur arms for a guy that tall. But again, I just can't get over the fact that they took Jerry Jeudy over CeeDee Lamb. I'm never going to get over that.
A lot of people would have, though. You know, it's not criminal. You and I both think CeeDee Lamb was the right pick.
But I'm just stuck on, are there any dinosaurs with long arms? That's what I'm thinking about right now. I know T-Rex is like the short arms.
Well, you can't really count a pterodactyl, right? Because those are wings, but those are pretty...
I mean, who had long arms?
I don't know. Is there a dinosaur with long arms? You've got Google right there.
Long-armosaurus.
Yes.
But so Jeudy going in the late ninth right now in redraft, wide receiver 41. That seems about right, but he doesn't threaten Sutton as the alpha dog. He's going to be the complimentary number two. So there's hope for Jeudy, but I don't expect him to pop off entirely in his rookie year. And there's one more rookie they did add at wide receiver. That's KJ Hamler. For redraft purposes, he's not going to have much of an impact, so we won't go there. But he is an intriguing dynasty prospect.
I'm not a fan.
Okay,
long-arm dinosaur.
The long-arm dinosaur is the Dino Kyrus.
Okay.
Dinochirus.
Tell us about the Dinochirus.
It's a genus of large ornithomimosaur that lived in the late Cretaceous around 70 million years ago in a pair of large arm shoulder girdles and a few other
shoulder girdles.
Bones of the dinosaur were first discovered in Mongolia.
I think they might introduce that one in like the
shoulder girdles?
The fourth coming installment of the Jurassic Park garbage series. They might throw that.
It's a very strange looking dinosaur. It looks like it has.
Now,
like,
is this one of the feathered dinosaurs
with like some weird wings?
That is weird. The arms don't look that long. It does look more like a duck than a. Now there's the long arms. Some of the versions are long arms. They just have like a paddle.
I mean, if Jerry Judy's got arms and hands like that, we've got no issues at all.
Well, the problem is he doesn't. He's got the short arms.
Can he mix it up with a T-Rex, you think? He looks like he's got...
Well, a lot of times they show you these pictures, but you don't realize the thing's scale. Only like 4 foot tall. Not all of the dinosaurs were gigantic.
They weren't. They were in Jurassic Park. That's realistic. All right, anyway. Back to a non-dinosaur in the young Noah Fant, the one more pass catcher we have to talk about, of course. Right now, going in the ninth round, tight end 11, 8.3 yards after the catch last year. That led all tight ends, second among tight ends in yards per reception, top seven in tight end end zone targets. And he really only started coming on in the second half of the year, so a lot of excitement around Fant. I think tight end 11 probably is floor, really. I think the ceiling is a little higher for Fant.
Yeah.
And then we got to talk about the running backs, of course. Charge, you alluded to Melvin Gordon, the new arrival. He's going in the mid-third round right now at RB19. Philip Lindsay's still in town, of course. Right now he's going round 8, around RB38. So last year for Denver, Lindsey and Royce Freeman had the same number of carries inside the 10-yard line, but Lindsey had twice as many inside the five. So he was the guy for Denver inside the stripe. And inside the five, 8 carries, 14 yards, 5 touchdowns. Very impressive.
That's good.
For those who don't remember, Gordon was a Charger last year. He held out the first 4 games, but he ended up with the 5th most carries inside the five in the league with 13, and his 15 yards inside the five was the 3rd most. So he did pretty well inside the five, too. Gordon scored as many touchdowns inside the five as Saquon Barkley, Nick Chubb, and Le'Veon Bell combined last year. So we're looking at a serious competition right now.
But yes,
pretty much like a 50-50 virtual split. But the one difference is one of these guys has passed the eye test multiple times, right? And one has failed.
Well, I would tell you it's Philip Lindsay who's passed the eye test.
That's what I would tell you too, Charge. That's what I was trying to get us to agree on.
All right.
Because we've talked about this before. Lindsay passes the eye test. Gordon really never has. He's never looked just elite. He's produced. He didn't score a touchdown in his rookie year. I'll never let him live that down.
I know you won't.
So for that reason, Gordon in the mid-third at RB19 with competition that probably is a better running back right behind him is the biggest downside per his ADP. And then Drew Lock, if everything comes together with these added weapons and he continues to progress, top 15, top 12 quarterback.
Yeah, he could be a QB1.
He is the easy upside player on this Denver Broncos team.
Let's go to Las Vegas. The constant in the Raiders offense is Josh Jacobs. He's presumed to be one of the league's few true workhorse backs, and I think that is the case here. Devonta Booker isn't a threat. Rookie Lynn Bowden likely is a utility or gadget guy.
Yep.
You know, he played primarily running back, but they're already talking about making him just a wide receiver, or he's just going to do whatever.
He's a scat back. Skippy dooby deep doop dot up dop.
Minnie the Moocher right here. Yeah. Nice job. Jacobs had 262 touches last year. I think he gets no fewer than that here and possibly up to 300 touches, in part because he should be more involved in the passing game. Who says so? His general manager, Mike Mayock, says we're going to get him more involved in the passing game. So let's hope that's the case. He averaged almost 5 yards per carry, and he's running behind Pro Football Focus's number 7 run blocking line from last year. And that run blocking line returns all 5 of their starters. So I don't see any real downside for Josh Jacobs. He's going right now at pick 9 overall. I think he's very safe at that spot. And so I think there's still plenty of reason to think that Jacobs will be as good as he was last year, if not better in year two.
Now, Charch, are you taking a guy like Josh Jacobs in the tail end of the first round, or will you be doing the opposite this year?
Well, I'm almost certainly going to be doing the opposite.
Okay, so
I can't
Josh Jacobs on any of your teams.
Probably not, unfortunately. End of the first round is notoriously dangerous for running backs, but this one feels pretty safe. Let's go to the passing game. A variety of new faces here. The first wide receiver taken in the draft was Henry Ruggs. Insanely fast from Alabama. Should be a day one starter. His modest production in college suggests a slightly longer learning curve than guys like Jerry Jeudy, who we just talked about. But his crazy speed and athleticism means that he's going to roast some secondaries, and you're going to want to play him in specific matchups early and then maybe later. Then don't forget, in the third round, they took rookie Bryan Edwards, who rewrote the South Carolina record book. Incredibly productive, amazing body control, high character guy. He had a knee injury that knocked him out at the end of 2019, wasn't able to participate in the combine. We're going to watch the status of that knee in training camp, but he's somebody who's going to threaten for time too.
Do you ever recall quite the disparity in rookie wide receivers where they went in the actual draft and then where they're going in terms of fantasy football with Ruggs? The first wide receiver taken, he's like 6th, 7th, 8th when it comes to rookie wide receivers, especially in redraft.
Where these boys being drafted. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute, as a matter of fact. Yes. So keep an eye on Bryan Edwards as well throughout the preseason. We'll want to see if his knee's healthy enough to make him a competitor for starting time against Tyrell Williams right off the bat. Who I don't like, by the way. I thought Tyrell Williams was relatively pedestrian last year. He got dinged up, didn't produce in big numbers, despite the fact that they really needed him a lot. So I'm not terribly interested in him, and I think there's a scenario here where Edwards, by the end of the year, just beats him out. So I expect Derek Carr to roll into the season as the starter, but he might be on a short leash because Marcus Mariota is there, and if Mariota looks good in training camp, maybe there's more of a battle here. As I tweeted yesterday, Derek Carr finished last year as quarterback 15. And that brings us to our upside player, Derek Carr, who's currently going off the board at quarterback 27.
Garbage time.
Garbage time. He's going off the board in the round 17. He's got all these new weapons, right, that we already talked about. Las Vegas' defense is going to be bad again. Mm. There's going to be a lot of passing.
A lot of garbage time.
A lot of garbage time, potentially. I think the riskiest player here is, Brian?
Darren Waller.
Yep. Going off the board at tight end five right now. Yeah, you look at all these new receivers that are going to eat into his targets, and he had just the three touchdowns last year on all the... It's like targeted 100 times. He turned into three touchdowns.
Shaking fist at Foster Moreau still for all those vulture touchdowns.
And then, so just too many new faces here. I think that, you know, we didn't even mention Witten there as well now, who's going to maybe eat into some of that production as well for Darren Waller. I just...
Especially in the red zone.
And Nelson Aguilar is going to infect everyone with the dropsies. It's bad.
Yeah, I know. Just by proximity, that could be the case. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Chargers briefly. And this is not an offense that is exciting by any means, I don't think. And then turn our attention to the NFC West, Seattle, San Francisco, the Rams, Arizona. Plenty to get to on Fantasy Football Weekly. Welcome back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Paul Jarchian, Matt Harrison, Brian Johnson with you. I didn't mean to take the wind out of your sails by suggesting that your Chargers analysis, Matt, is going to be anything other than stellar. But just the reality from a fantasy standpoint, this might be the least compelling offense in the NFL.
So last week, I got to do the Carolina offense.
Mm.
This looks like the AFC version of the Carolina offense.
Okay.
Chargers passed on 62% of their plays last season. That was fifth most in the league.
That's a lot.
Of course, they lost their quarterback, Phil Rivers. Mm-hmm. He went to Indy with his 17 kids, leaving Tyrod Taylor and Justin Herbert to man the backfield. Now, Ty Taylor started a few games for the Browns at the beginning of 2018 before Baker took over.
Sorry, it's Tuh Taylor.
Oh, Tuh.
Tyrod.
Tuh. That's right.
Tyrod.
Tuh. Yeah. But his last real starting gig were his 3 years in Buffalo, where he had a high completion percentage. He was a low risk, low mistake kind of guy. In three full seasons of starting, he never threw more than six interceptions in a year.
Wow.
So he's
all right. He's, and which, by the way, keeps you in the league a long time. That's how you stay as a backup quarterback in this league.
And he is age 30 this year. So I look at this offense to run similar to Carolina's. Taylor's career average depth of target is in the nines, which should allow the Chargers to be a little bit more functional than Teddy Bridgewater, who's in like the sevens.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a safe offense, high percentage throws and a lot of them. A little bit of rushing from your 30-year-old quarterback who still has some wheels and a heavy dose of Austin Eckler. And this is setting up to be really, really nice for him this year. While he was in Buffalo, while Taylor was in Buffalo, LeSean McCoy was seventh in the league in running back receptions in 2017, 10th in 2016, and he was injured for most of 2015.
All right.
So outside of Christian McCaffrey's otherworldly receiving stats, Austin Eckler had the second most targets in the league. And he had 104 targets last year. Melvin Gordon had 52 targets last year. Those should probably all roll Eckler's way.
I would think so.
Eckler led running backs in the league with 40-plus yard receptions with three. He trailed McCaffrey by only 12 receiving yards. He had 993, and he topped McCaffrey's eight receiving touchdowns. His average depth of target was 1.21 yards, Eckler's.
All right, that's not much.
His average yards per catch was 10.8.
Dang.
So let that sink in a little bit.
That's some impressive work after the catch right there.
Yeah, so the thing that really hurt him was his red zone touches. He only had 17 carries in the 20 and only 9 inside the 5. And
sure.
Brian already talked about Melvin Gordon being really good.
Melvin Gordon's gone. So does he automatically get those?
Can he increase the rushing value without Melvin Gordon there? I think the answer is yes. Melvin Gordon had more rushing attempts in 12 games than Eckler did in 16. So if you take half of Gordon's 162 rushing attempts last year,
okay,
give them to Eckler,
all right,
81 more.
All right.
It's another 340 rushing yards and at least a handful of touchdowns if they give it to him inside the five.
And so, by the way, I think Eckler is mistakenly viewed as a scat back because he's a pass catching back. That people think that he's a slighter build than he is.
He's a house.
He's a muscular dude.
Yeah,
he can run inside and he could be a goal line back. Will they let him? There are at least two other running backs on roster that could end up being goal line factors.
Yeah, and that's Joshua Kelly and Justin Jackson. Both are going off way late in drafts. And I know that Brian on this show has been a big Justin Jackson fan, but man, I think Austin Eckler's just that good, and I think that they're going to roll with him this year. Mm-hmm. Lastly, on Eckler, let me see. I had to move around in my little sheet here. Boo.
Now you're scatting right now.
Yeah, now I'm scatting. So basically, it's Carolina all over again. It's a quarterback with mid-range average depth of target. He liked to feature his multi-tool running mm-hmm. back in the past. In the third round, Eckler's probably one of the safer picks in fantasy. I actually like him a lot. He's my safety play. In Taylor's 3 years in Buffalo, he only had one wide receiver crack the top 50 in fantasy points scored in that position. That was Sammy Watkins in 2015. He did not have a top 50 receiver in 16 or 17.
And he had Robert Woods there for at least part, if not all, of those years.
Yeah. So my riskiest player, you may think it's Keenan Allen.
I would.
It's not. He's going out in the fourth round, and he's getting a new quarterback. You're close. It's Mike Williams.
Okay.
Williams is a deep threat.
Yeah.
And a touchdown guy
yeah.
who only scored twice last year, by the way. His average depth of target was 18.3 compared to Allen, who runs primarily safe routes from the slot at 10.3 yards downfield.
Wow.
That's right.
Big
in
difference.
Tyrod's range.
Yeah. Right.
So I like Allen to continue to get the targets mm-hmm. and the receptions. I think Williams is just a don't touch kind of guy, similar to Curtis Samuel on the Panthers.
Yeah.
That's the guy I'm avoiding.
What do you think about Hunter Henry? Because obviously, you know, he's still widely viewed as a top five fantasy.
Yeah.
He's
tight end going off at tight end number seven right now, okay. 72 overall. So
wow.
the end of the sixth round.
Okay.
The dude has just produced every yeah. time when he's healthy. And by all accounts, he's healthy right now. He hasn't done anything in a while. So I think Hunter Henry, who's in that same range downfield mm-hmm. With the high percentage throws, I think he's in for some fine play as well. So Mike Williams is the guy I'm avoiding. By the way, he's going off the board at 97 overall, wide receiver 40. That seems really early for a guy who scored two touchdowns last year.
All right, let's go to San Francisco. Brian, this is obviously a Super Bowl caliber team, but we've got a number of new faces in this offense and changes in the offense with the additions at wide receiver. We've got Raheem Mostert walking in as your probable starter. So this is a different offense than the one that we saw, especially at this time last year.
Yeah, and for fantasy purposes, it wasn't a very exciting offense last year. San Fran ran or passed the ball 48.6% of the time. That was 31st. They ran yep. the ball 51.4%. That was the second most rushing plays by percentage. Did score 3.2 offensive touchdowns per game, though. That was fourth most. One of four teams to average more than three touchdowns per game, offensive touchdowns, that is. Joe Staley retired at left tackle. That's
yep,
a big loss. But just bring in Trent Williams, all-world
yeah,
left tackle,
right.
to fill in there. So
well,
that's,
assuming he's still all-world, we haven't
yeah,
hardly
true.
Seen
good
him
point,
play in
good
two
point.
Years.
He's still in his 20s, late 20s, right?
Yeah, I think he's 29.
Yeah, he should be just fine. But Jimmy G's got a pretty solid line in front of him. Not elite, but definitely very solid. Speaking of Jimmy G, going off the board in the early 12th right now at quarterback 20. A little high for me. Only four top 10 finishes at quarterback last year for Jimmy. Three of them came in the first 10 games, and two of those three were against the Cardinals.
Mm.
He will face the Cardinals twice again this year, of course,
that helps.
As every year, as long as he's a 49er. But really, you know, San Francisco just needs him to be a system quarterback. They won a playoff game when he had 77 passing yards and zero touchdowns.
Yeah.
So they want to play a good defense. They want to run the ball. For fantasy purposes, I'm not loving Garoppolo a whole lot. But I will say this. I will say this one stat, and it's very interesting, from Ian Harditz of Pro Football Focus. The most yards per pass attempt in 2019, excluding screen passes, with a minimum of 100 attempts. So
okay.
basically, a minimum of 100 attempts that weren't screen passes. The average yards per attempt, Ryan Tannehill, 9.7. And then Jimmy Garoppolo and Patrick Mahomes were tied at 8.8.
Wow.
So if San Fran reverts back to a couple of years ago when the defense was crap.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think that's quite going to happen, right?
Well, probably not, but they were very bad not yeah. long ago. But yes, they're much better. They're more improved. If the team from the defensive side takes a 180 per se, there is some hope for Garoppolo, but
I still think there's more hope than you're giving him because of the improvements at the wide receiver position especially compared to where they were rolling into last season, where they were banking on Marquise Goodwin, always banged up, hurt, every, you know, all the problems they had at receiver last year. They roll into this year with a first round pick at receiver, Deebo Samuel coming off that great second half and playoff run that he had. I just feel like this is a this is an opportunity now for Garoppolo to be materially better because the receivers are.
Yeah, well, let's knock Kittle out of the way real quick. Yeah. All I'll say about George Kittle, final year of rookie deal, wants money.
Yeah.
Motivation is there. Tight end two right now, though, in, by ADP. You taking Kittle or Kelsey if you want a tight end?
I'm still taking Kelsey.
Still taking Kelsey. All right, fair enough.
I want part of that Chiefs offense.
So Deebo Samuel, let's talk about the wide receivers. Unfortunately, suffered this Jones fracture not long ago. Timetable, 12 to 16 weeks. He's probably not going to be full go until second, third week of the season if all goes well for him. The interesting thing about Deebo is he did have a strong second half, but his big games where he was like top 12 and inside at wide receiver, there's a handful. He had a rushing touchdown in each one of those games.
Yeah.
That's seriously, he's an amazing real life football player.
He really is. He's a great athlete.
He is. And he can run the ball, catch the ball, of course.
And it doesn't, I know run it. You can never predict a wide receiver to have rushing touchdowns, but he could. I mean, it's not like a total fluke.
If you're going to predict the best chance for a running or wide receiver, he's going to be one of them for sure. But I don't, for me, it's been I'm fading the 49ers pass attack in this one. The 49ers wide receivers averaged 9.5 catches per game as a whole last year.
Yeah.
And I know they're better.
They are better.
But I don't know. Ayuk, let's get to him right now. 16th round in redraft, wide receiver 60. Probably going to be the top wide receiver option going into the season with Samuel dinged up. I'm worried about rookie wide receivers this year with no mini camps. And I don't know, 9.5 catches a game. I'm fading Ayuk. I'm still fading Samuel, even though he's going off the board cheaper. If you're looking for a fill-in for Samuel, people are going to Jalen Hurd right now.
Yeah.
Rookie wideout out of Baylor, drafted in the third round, 6'5", 230. He's a beast, but he's raw. But I think Kendrick Bourne is the guy I'd target out of any wide receiver for the 49ers. Only two games with six targets last year. But in both those games, he caught touchdown and went over 40 yards. We saw six targets. So
I saw they're trying to extend him right now. Kendrick Bourne.
They are. I think they will. And then, I don't know. The receiving corps is a mess. You really need to see what's up with Deebo as we near closer to the season. But I'm not super optimistic from a fantasy standpoint for any of them. We do have to talk the running backs too. Very well. I'll go as quickly as possible. This is a sticky team. Raheem Mostert going off in the mid sixth as RB 23.
What a perfect do the opposite running back is Raheem
perfect spot
Mostert.
For do the opposite. And then there's still Tevin Coleman, of course, going in the mid ninth right now. Is
all right. So can
RB
we just
40.
Talk about Tevin Coleman for a minute?
Sure.
How about he sucks?
Okay.
He's just not good. So you know, I just don't think you know as great as this offense can be, especially for any running back seems to be able to produce in it. Raheem Mostert's better by any criteria, I think, than Tevin Coleman just as a running back. And so I think Mostert gets the first crack at the majority of work.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Mostert's last six games last year finished inside the top 20 among running backs in all of them.
Yeah.
Four of those six were inside the top 10.
And you're not even talking about the playoffs where he
this is regular
the Vikings
season,
and Packers, and all they did was just run him.
Tevin Coleman, Mostert. Each carried the ball 137 times last year. Mm-hmm. Mostert finished with 228 more rushing yards. Also finished with more receiving yards on 30% less catches than Coleman. So, yeah. Mostert's the guy, and he is your high upside play. If he can get the bell cow usage, you know, the workhorse back all year long on this team, top 10 RB potential.
You forget.
Easily.
This is Mike Shanahan's kid. Shanahanigans, man.
Yeah, we
Tevin Coleman.
That's fantasy owners hated Mike Shanahan. Yeah. We love him. We love Kyle, though. Yep. Kyle styles us. He is as predictable as he's so predictable. I love him. I love his offenses. They've been great. All right, let's go to see. You're done, right?
We want to talk about Jerick McKinnon?
No.
Okay, well, I'm done.
No. All right. Who is so? Wait, let me clarify.
High upside.
Your upside
is
guy was Mostert. I agree.
And really, the downside for me now it's got to be Ayuk because his ADP is going to climb with Deebo Samuel injured. I think he'll creep into the mid 30s, which puts him in starter potential in terms of fantasy football. And he's a rookie, and there's going to be growing pains, and that's going to be a frustrating process to pick which weeks to plug him in. So I'm fading all the wideouts for San Fran personally.
Let's go to Seattle, and this won't take very long because I think this year's version looks just like last year, which looked just like the year before it. You know, we know what Seattle's all about here, and there's not a lot of new parts. They were third in rushing attempts last year. They were second in rushing attempts the year before that. You know this is going to be a run-first offense. Chris Carson returns as the starter. There is Carlos Hyde there, but he stinks. And Rashad Penny is trying to recover from his second major knee injury, so he's not really a factor either. So Chris Carson, it should be the focal point of much of this offense.
Was there some talk about Marshawn Lynch possibly rejoining the team again?
You know, I thought Lynch looked pretty bad.
Yeah, very bad.
I just don't think there's anything left in the tank. The offensive line, I'm a little bit nervous about. Let's talk about all the changes here. It always changes in Seattle's offensive line. Always. At center, B.J. Finney was signed from Pittsburgh to compete with Joey Hunt. Right guard Damian Lewis was a third-round pick from LSU who's going to step in for D.J. Fluker. And then the team signed a new right tackle, Brandon Shell from the Jets, to replace Jermaine Ifedi. Ugh. I don't know that any of those guys are better than the guys they're replacing. And Seattle finished with Pro Football Focus's 30th ranked pass blocking unit from last year.
Yikes.
They were 16th in run blocking. I'm nervous about this offensive line. And I think there's going to be some problems with all these changes. And I don't know if these players are going to be any better.
Who needs an offensive line when you have Russell Wilson?
Well, there's that. Let's just dispel the notion that Russell Wilson's a rushing quarterback. You're living in 2015 if you think that's the case. The last 2 years, he's put together his two worst rushing seasons, averaging about 350 rushing yards per year, and he has averaged 1.5 rushing touchdowns.
I wonder how much rushing he's actually just doing in the backfield, scrambling around.
Oh, lots more.
If you could get points for that.
That's right.
Points per scramble.
If we could go
yards.
Tarkenton on Russell Wilson, then I'm in. DK Metcalf stunned almost everybody with his productivity last year. 100 targets, 900 yards, 7 touchdowns. Clearly has the body to be a red zone threat. And maybe if they, you know, in his second year, maybe if they, you know, maybe those 7 touchdowns turns into double digit touchdowns. You know, I think there's a lot of optimism on DK Metcalf. Tyler Lockett, just straight solid back-to-back seasons, top 15 fantasy production each of the last 2 years. I think he'll be a factor here too. But the bigger story, I think, is this team just doesn't pass enough to elevate any of these guys into like top 10 level territory. That's just not how this offense is built. And we just don't have the volume from the passing game.
Now, did you see on Twitter, I think it was this week, Russell Wilson was working out with Antonio Brown.
I did see that. Yes.
A little interesting tidbit there.
That would be interesting. Antonio Brown's getting drafted everywhere. I mean, you know, he's not surviving through drafts undrafted anymore.
And it seems like that kind of locker room with strong head coach Pete Carroll could probably help keep Antonio Brown a little more subdued.
This is like a very NBA like offseason almost for some of these teams, like these super teams, like the Bucks are countering the Patriots counter with Cam. Yeah,
there's like a little something to that, and it's you would think you need ring cred, I think, to shut down Antonio Brown, and they got it. Mm-hmm. You know, and so maybe this is going to be the right spot.
He probably would have been a good citizen in New England last year, too, had that played out.
Yeah, probably would have been. Yeah. But that got short circuited mostly by himself. Greg Olsen is the new starting tight end, and this offense is tight end friendly. Remember last year how people were pivoting to Nick Vinette and Will Disley and Jacob Hollister, and mostly those guys that actually produced
just
was the wild
pivoting
thing. Yeah, so you had to keep pivoting because they kept getting hurt. Well, mostly all those guys are gone, and for whatever part of 16 games that Olsen gives you, he'll get the majority of what has been a productive tight end offense. Only Will Disley returns from last year. So the riskiest player based on ADP, I think, is DK Metcalf going off the board 2 picks after Tyler Lockett. We assume he's going to be a lot better in year 2, and he probably will be, but will it be better than Tyler Lockett in year 2? I don't know. I'm not ready to quite go there yet. And the player with the most upside is Greg Olsen going off the board at tight end 23. So, you know, is your second tight end? He'll probably give you tight end 1 returns while he's healthy.
So he fits right in there with the Seattle good tight ends who get hurt a lot.
Yes, it
he
is
fits
perfect.
Right in.
Yes,
yeah.
he'll do his thing, and that means getting hurt. And that will, at round 20, if you've got Greg Olsen starting it for 6 weeks, fine. And you kick them to the curb.
I think we might have some more tight ends to talk about in the next segment.
I bet we do as we go to the Rams. That is a tight end, a friendly offense.
Yeah.
Man, there's a lot of people banking on one of the two tight ends really emerging. We'll talk about the Rams and their tight end situation when we come back to Fantasy Football Weekly. Fantasy Football Weekly, Paul Charchi and Matt Harrison, Brian Johnson with you. Got two teams left to break down as we analyze the AFC and NFC West. We go to the Rams, an offense that obviously underproduced a lot last year. And many people, including me, are optimistic they're going to make the bounce back this year, return to a better form.
Matt, what a weird offense that was last year,
wasn't it?
Yeah, they passed 61.2% of the time, seventh highest rate in the league. Mm-hmm. They lost Todd Gurley and Brandon Cooks in the offseason. Offensive tackle Andrew Whitworth did re-sign for 3 years. That's good. And then they drafted Cam Akers and Van Jefferson as the Gurley and Cooks replacements. Mm-hmm. What kind of offense is this one? It's actually a very safe one. They don't have a lot of risk to them. They're tied to Jared Goff for the next half decade, and Sean McVay is trying to scheme a way to put Goff in the best position because it's very possible that Goff's just not a very good quarterback. What that means is they're going to run the ball, and it's going to be a short passing game. Mm-hmm. Goff's average depth target, 8 yards, tied for 26th in the league last year. That was lower than Mason Rudolph, Mitch Trubisky.
No.
Oh, here it is. Jacoby Brissett, Kyle Allen, David Bloch, lower than all of those guys.
Wow.
Goff was only sacked 22 times in 16 games, though, which puts him in the top 10 as far as least time sacked. That's good for that offensive line. Mm-hmm. He did fumble 10 times last season and threw 16 picks. Mm. So ouch. They're going to try to make him safer and safer and get the ball out of his hands as quick as possible. So how will the short passing offense work? Pretty good for most of the guys you're interested in on this offense.
Wow, Cooper Kupp especially.
Cooper Kupp's average depth of target, 7.2. Robert mm-hmm. Woods, 8.4. Tyler Higbee, 6.5. Guess who didn't belong in that offense last year?
Brandon Cooks.
Yeah, at 14.5.
Yeah, right. He's gone.
So Kupp and Woods each clocked in at right around the same amount of targets, receptions, and yards, literally give or take a few digits up or down on this, but mm-hmm. 130 targets, 90 receptions, 1,100 yards, both almost identical.
Yeah.
The difference was Kupp had 10 touchdowns, Woods had 2.
Yeah. That you figure everybody, including me, thinks that that 2 number for touchdowns on Robert Woods is going to look, we're going to look back and go, well, that was an anomaly.
Yeah. 2 is a little bit ridiculous. In his other 2 years at the Rams, he scored 5 and 6. He's never been a high touchdown guy. Mm-hmm. 6 is his record in a year, but he'll probably get closer to 5 or 6 than to stay at 2.
Well, but with Brandon Cooks out, I just feel like Woods is going to get, you know, add 10% to his looks. And, you know, I want to believe that he's capable of a 9 touchdown season.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, the early drafters haven't depressed Robert Woods' ADP quite enough for me.
No, in fact, a lot of people see it like I do. They think Robert Woods is a good receiver who's going to have a better season.
You have to take him at the end of the 4th round.
That feels about right to me.
That's not quite low enough for him to be my value pick.
All right.
My value pick is Tyler Higbee. His ADP is low enough. He's going off the board in the 9th round mm-hmm. as tight end number 12 right now. The Rams finally figured something out at the end of the season with Higbee. Listen to his last 5 games of the year when the Rams were still fighting for a wild card spot.
Yeah.
8 targets, 7 receptions, 107 and a score.
Okay, that's a very good game.
11 targets, 7 for 116. 14 targets, 12 for 111.
Those are great games.
11 targets, 9 for 104.
Yeah.
12 targets, 8 for 84 and a score. Now let's extrapolate those numbers.
Now you got George Kittle.
He averaged 8.6 catches, 104 yards and 0.4 scores in those last 5 games. He was Kittle or Kelsey for the last month of the year. So I like him a lot at that level because it seems like they figured something out with him and how to utilize him properly. He was really splitting time with Gerald Everett earlier in the year.
Well, yeah, his whole career prior to that.
And they figured out, oh, this guy's pretty good. Let's toss him the ball. So Higbee is my upside play. The riskiest play is anyone in the running game. And the highest drafted of those is Cam Akers, who's mm-hmm. going off the board in the middle of the 8th. So it's not even that risky.
No.
The Daryl Henderson truthers are all butthurt because the Rams drafted Akers. But don't sleep on Malcolm Brown continuing to be a part of this offense.
Oh, no. I know. He probably will be.
Especially. Gross. Especially near the end zone.
Yeah.
Gurley took 15 carries from inside the 5 last year and converted 8 touchdowns. That was great.
Good. Those are good numbers.
And those numbers are gone. Brown had 8 carries from inside the 5 that he took for 5 touchdowns.
Also
last
very
year.
Productive.
So that's very productive.
Yeah.
Akers could end up being the between the 20s runner. Brown could be the goal line guy, Henderson the change of pace back. So the sneaky bonus value, I think, is Malcolm Brown here, who's the guy that you can get very last out of all these running backs.
I bet for sure last.
223 in ADP,
man.
Running back 65. So that's insanely low for a guy who might be sitting on between 5 to 9 touchdowns, possibly just
nine
from the goal line carries and carries from inside the five. If Cam Akers isn't
possible.
Ready to take that role, I think
Cam Akers is built to be a goal line guy, though. And so it's not clear that Malcolm Brown will get those carries, but the fact that he's been successful with the carries they've given him at the stripe.
And there's so many carries that are gone.
Yes, you might be right about that.
So,
boy, in best ball, because Malcolm Brown's going to be I think he's going to be a 7 to 10 touch per game guy.
Yeah, probably.
When he doesn't score, he's going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
But he's going to have these games where he's going to get touchdowns, maybe 2 in a game. And for best ball, I like Malcolm Brown.
Yeah, that's he's definitely a best ball guy there.
Let's go to Arizona. Kyler Murray, everybody expecting a big uptick in production in Kyler Murray. He's where's his ADP right now among quarterbacks? Last I saw was
QB4.
Yeah, that's a massive, massive jump from where he was last year.
Absolutely. Yeah, Kyler Murray last year, most completions of 50 plus yards. Kirk Cousins had 6 that led the NFL. Kyler Murray was tied with him with 6 completions of 50 plus yards. Here's the list of rookie quarterbacks with a top 12 fantasy finish since 2010. Kyler Murray, Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, RG3, Cam Newton. All those guys are pretty good from a fantasy perspective. RG3, you can give or take what you want there. So, the sky is the limit for Murray in his second season. He was 3rd in rushing attempts last year and 2nd in yards among quarterbacks, averaging 5.9 yards per catch with 4 touchdowns. So he's a weapon. He's going right about in the right spot.
It's
a high flying offense, and there's going to be a lot of excitement with Cliff Kingsbury in his second year. So before I get to Murray's pass catchers, I just want to talk about Kenyon Drake. Probably might be the safest running back going in the first two rounds, and that includes everyone. Starting week 9, Drake started getting about 20 touches per game with Arizona. He came over from Miami, of course. From week 9 on, he only finished behind McCaffrey, Derrick Henry, and Zeke in PPR formats. And from week 9 to 17, he finished, Drake, that is, 75% of his games as an RB2 and nearly 40% as an RB1.
Wow.
That's an incredibly safe floor with
that
a ridiculous upside.
Yeah.
For comparison's sake, you have guys like Alvin Kamara, Aaron Jones, Joe Mixon were finishing more than 20% of their games outside the top 30.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys can certainly win you your league, but they can lose it for you if you draft them in the first round. So
yeah.
I'm loving Drake. He's going, it depends on the league, but you can say mid-second as RB like 10 to 12. But I think that might be a little too late for Drake, but he's not my upside guy.
Mm.
We'll get to him in a little bit.
Well, he's your safe guy. You already said he's super safe.
He is super safe. Super safe guy. Now to the weapons for Kyler Murray in the passing game. And of course, we'll start with DeAndre Hopkins coming over from Houston. Going in the late first right now or early second around wide receiver 4. You're generally seeing Michael Thomas, of course, Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill going before Hopkins. And you know what? They would probably be going before Hopkins if he was in Houston still,
I think.
So the main concern is, will you see the targets he saw in Houston with Arizona? I was shocked to see this. Arizona's wide receivers totaled the 3rd most catches last year, with 238.
Okay.
That's nearly 15 a game. That's a lot. Remember I said 49ers had 9.5. So that's a big difference. And for reference, the Texans actually finished 4th with 228. So last year, Arizona, it's not like they lost any key member of their wide receiver core. It was Christian Kirk and Larry Fitzgerald.
Primarily.
And then it was like Demir Byrd and Andy Isabella. So the volume's still there for Hopkins.
Yeah.
So despite that, though, he's still my biggest downside risk based on the ADP. Just because wide receiver is so deep, you could argue taking a couple other wideouts instead of him where he's at. I don't know. First round. Well, I think any wide receiver is risky in the first round this year.
Deshaun Watson is awesome.
He's a better quarterback.
Kyler Murray wants to someday be Deshaun Watson. Awesome. He's not, you know, we don't know that he's there yet and will ever be there. So, you know, there's we're still drafting Hopkins as though he's got an elite quarterback when we don't know that he's got an elite quarterback.
And if you just had to choose, would you say he's going to have a better year than he's ever had, or probably come in a little under than his normal numbers? It just feels
to me, it feels like he's, I'm about, expecting about the same.
Still too risky for me with his ADP. This is a team to, it's tough to find risk on this team, really, outside of Murray. And if you're that worried about Murray and Hopkins, couple more wideouts to talk about. Christian Kirk right now going in the late eighth round, wide receiver 37, only played 13 games last year, but had at least nine times, double digit targets five times, and at least six catches seven times as well. And like I said, he missed those three games. If he played a full 16 game season, he's easily inside the top 24 wide receiver. And you think of Kirk and you just think of defenses keying in on Drake and DeAndre Hopkins, and this kid might just go crazy running free in single coverage all season long. So, but he is not my highest upside player on the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh, I know what's coming. Our listeners don't, but I do.
Some might. So I have to talk about Larry Fitzgerald, probably the greatest to ever do it. I'm going to say even better than Jerry Rice, considering the awful quarterbacking that Fitz has had in his career when Rice had Montana and Steve Young. But Larry, a brutal year last year, a great start, topped 100 yards in his first two games. His one top 12 finish came in week one, but after it started week three and on, he only topped 60 yards twice. And don't forget Hakeem Butler. Andy Isabella needs some reps, and I feel like he's going to forego some of his snaps for those guys. So actually, Fitzgerald's my downside guy. I'm saying you can't draft Larry Fitzgerald in fantasy football this year. I'm not going to do it. It breaks my heart. I'm pulling for him in reality, but people will still draft him. But don't waste your draft pick on chasing Fitz of old.
All right, who's your upside guy? Let's get it out of the way.
Upside guy doesn't really have an ADP yet, despite how hard I'm trying.
There's upside.
And that is Dan Arnold.
Dan Arnold.
Look,
player without an ADP.
Not a lot of numbers or tape on Dan as of right now.
A tight end on the team that featured the fewest tight end snaps of all last year. Something's got to go.
I'm going to kindly ask you to shut up now. Let's break down what we got for Dan Arnold. Look at this guy going right to last year. Didn't we say not to do that at the top of the hour?
It's our only
amateur hour.
Kingsbury.
Amateur hour to my right. Year. Anyway, Dan Arnold. Yes. Went undrafted out of Wisconsin Platteville in 2017, but was signed by the Saints as a wide receiver.
Oh, does this sound familiar? Sound familiar? All right.
Converted tight end year later.
Yeah.
Played 1 year with the Saints, really, and one with Arizona last year. Only 20 career receptions. Not a lot. But he's averaging 14 yards a catch.
Okay.
15 of those 20 receptions have gone for first downs.
Okay.
That's pretty impressive.
Okay.
Did not see real game action until the last four games of 2019 with the Cardinals. But in those four games, saw 13 targets, turned him into eight catches, 127 yards, and two touchdowns.
In four games. That's still like averaging 25 yards a game.
You guys are morons. Anyway, he started just one of those games. He didn't see full game action. Think of the 13 targets. If he gets 13 targets in a game.
Well, is he the starter?
He started week 17.
Okay.
Just one start.
Okay. So is he the starter this year?
Yes.
Dan Arnold, the starter.
Cliff Kingsbury wants him to be the starter. In his one start last year, six targets, four catches, 76 yards, and a touchdown. He's going to get full run in an offense that plays soft tight end defenses. No, put your finger down. Put it up your nose. What do you got?
I was going to say, DeAndre Hopkins, 2015, 192 targets, 111 receptions, 1,500 yards, 11 touchdowns. Who are his quarterbacks, you ask?
Yeah.
Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett.
Wow.
I think he can produce.
With anybody.
With Kyler Murray. Yeah,
I think he'll be okay.
Yeah, he'll be fine.
All right.
Dan Arnold. Fantasy Dan relevance. Arnold.
We saved the best for last.
Freaking Dan right. Arnold.
Yes.
Damn right, Dan Arnold.
ADP is an infinity symbol for Dan Arnold.
It'd be a cool jersey
sooner
number.
Than that. Somebody should get that.
Yeah.
He should go to the Jets or the Jets. Jets won't trade for Sam Darnold. But imagine a Sam Darnold to Dan Arnold connection.
Would be great.
You know, they're talking. They're going to have these expanded rosters due to COVID this year. They might have a real problem where teams can't have, you know, like linebackers have to wear between whatever 40 and 50 or something, right? You have to, you know, but if you're the Steelers, you've already retired like four numbers of linebackers.
Sure.
And you've also got a bunch of linebackers. You know, they may run out of numbers for some of these guys. They might need the infinity symbol or a half, like
pie. Yep.
Maybe.
Let's get nerdy.
Let's get nerdy. Speaking of COVID, next show, I want to talk about some of the COVID prevention measures your league needs to take.
Mm.
Now, get your league squared away now for some of the things that might happen COVID related. That'll come next week as one of several topics.
So, and I can bring up an early one. We're in an Empire Baseball League, Brian and I, and we don't know what to do with our Empire Baseball League this year if they play a 60-game baseball season.
Yeah.
Do you treat it as a full year
or not?
Do you just treat it as a one-off
year? That's some of the things we're going to talk about. What happens if it's an abbreviated season? What if it does, you know, a little bit like baseball last year, where they just have to, or not baseball, like basketball or hockey, where they just basically stop it.
Yeah.
Then what? So, you know, we're going to talk about some of those things. Also, we'll talk about Cam Newton going to the Patriots, which we didn't cover in this one. We'll talk about his fantasy value specifically with the Patriots.
It's not going to be anything because Jared Stidham's the starter.
Yeah, well, maybe. You know, they don't have a monetary demand to have to pay Cam, make Cam the starter, because they paid him because they didn't pay him anything.
They could cut him.
They could cut him outright. By the way, as a side note, for those people that have made it to the 56-minute mark of this podcast, the Jets, the Bills, and the Dolphins, they all could have blocked this move.
Yeah.
If you're the Bills,
plenty of cap space.
If you're the Bills, right, they've the Bill. Let's take the Dolphins out of it, who I still think aren't, you know, they're not necessarily thinking about winning the division this year, but maybe, who knows? The Bills really are, for sure, and the Jets might be too. They were sitting at, I believe, $22 and $25 million of cap space. And I know that Cam would have had to come to those teams as the backup behind a young starter that's not going to give up that job. But instead of making $1.5 million, they could have gone, here, take $10 million. We'll have the best backup in the league, or one of the best backups in the league. Also, we play keep away from the Patriots, and the Bills and the Jets didn't do it.
Maybe Cam wasn't interested in being a backup at all.
Have they made public the
$10 million
incentives baked into his contracts?
No.
You got to like that from a fan. You like when guys are playing for stats to get paid.
I believe he can make up to $6 or $7 million with incentives.
Sure.
Yeah.
But he's not even guaranteed to be the starter, right? Although he's the prop.
Come on.
He'll be the starter.
Jared Stidham.
All right. Thanks for making it to the very end of this podcast. We're grateful for all of you listening. If you missed any of the previous team-by-team breakdowns, we encourage you to go back through the previous podcast, learn all about all the 32 teams in the NFL fantasy style.
We'll give the minute mark for Dan Arnold, too, on the tweet, right? So people can go
right to the Dan Arnold, go to 53-minute mark for everything you ever want to know about Dan Arnold. Bye-bye, everybody.
Fantasy Football Weekly is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.